Good morning. Today is a Monday. It's the 5th of February. The 5th of February. Now, wouldn't that be cool if somebody came out with a line of liquor? A fifth of, and you had 12 varieties.
I think you're onto something.
Yeah, or sodas, or, it doesn't have to have the alcohol content on it. speaking now with formal chief, Brian. Hey.
Good morning, sir.
You know, I never in my wildest dreams did I ever think that there would be a police chief, Brian. Yeah, just got to let that one play on your lips for a while. well, congratulations, first thing out of the chute before I make you feel really intelligent.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
All right. Okay, well, let's see, are we still in the... We're still in the same category of politics and history. Oh, okay. When someone tells a secret, do we say he or she has spilled the beans?
I don't know. The first thing that came to my mind was that bean commercial where the dog is the only one who knows the recipes.
So. Bush's baked beans,
beans, but I don't know. Maybe they used to keep things in cans and secrets in cans, and if they ever got found, they were spilling the beans.
I don't think so. As a system of voting, the ancient Greeks placed beans in a jar. They called these small beans, or balls, ballota, B-A-L-L-O-T-A, which gives us the word ballot. A white bean was a yes, and a brown bean was a no. I think most folks have probably been exposed to that concept. The beans were then counted in secret so the candidates wouldn't know who voted for or against them. If the container was knocked over and the beans were spilled, the secret was out of the jar.
Interesting.
Yeah. So how's your mathematical skills these days? Able to count to three?
Oh, three? We're good, yes. I'm like, how far are we going to go here? Yeah. How many decimal points?
Let's see. We're not going to go into pi or anything like that. Oh, boy. So first thing out of the chute, then you have an event that's once a year at least, if not a career, live shooting. And, oh, my gosh, what's going on? And scramble, and then the drawn out. In general terms, as far as is permissible, what happened?
Yeah, it was a Monday morning. It seems to be a Monday morning. I was on my way to the gym.
Boy, your Mondays are just always the highlights of your week, huh?
I was on the way to the gym when my phone rang, and, 19 hours later, was finally back on my way home. Yeah, so we had an individual in Eureka who appeared probably to be suffering from some type of mental health issue, and we had a young juvenile who was assaulted with a knife who was able to get to help, and we were able to locate them. And the follow-up information we received led us to a residence as officers were trying to determine the safety of the other occupants that we knew were inside. We learned that the suspect in the case had barricaded himself in an upstairs room with four other occupants of the home, three of those being juveniles under the age of 12. So from that point, call for additional resources. Being the Humboldt County SWAT team, we'd already gone to a barricade. He was not coming out. We were inside trying to...
Folks inside the building.
Yeah, so we were already trying to negotiate. We were negotiating and talking, but realized he wasn't coming out. We called the crisis negotiation team in, along with mental health professionals, and spent the next, about 1 o'clock, I think it was, when one of the individuals inside being held hostage was able to get out.
Escaped or released? Or do you know yet?
Don't know. Okay. And then they were able to negotiate. The negotiators were able to negotiate the other three kids out of the room. Got them to safety. Got them the medical attention that they needed. One of those had also been severely injured. So
this individual, the what do you call, not the hostage, do you call them the...
The suspect.
Okay. Was responsible for both?
We believe so,
of
yes.
Of those situations? Okay.
Yeah. And then we negotiated for another, you know, 4 hours before there was an incident that created contact, or contact was created with the suspect, which resulted in an Osterwald shooting. So.
Is there a time limit on those things? I mean, when you go in, you say, okay, 2 days, half a day, or is each one just very unique?
You know, time is usually on our side, as long as there's no extenuating circumstances. Like with the hostages inside, that could definitely dictate, you know, an immediate response based on what we could perceive potentially happening inside. If there was signs that there was an assault taking place, then we would have had to have taken a different course of action a lot quicker.
Like risk reduction, basically, for for those that are...
Yeah. Yeah. So, but no, you never walk into them and put a time limit on them. You feel them out. You, like I said, time is on our side, especially once the hostages are out. And we were utilizing every tactic, every insight that we had into, you know, any information that we were able to glean from people to try to negotiate a peaceful resolution. That's what we want, is a peaceful resolution. Our first mission was to get the hostages out and make sure they're safe. And then it was a peaceful arrest of the suspect, because at that time we did have an arrest warrant for him. So,
adrenaline is a major factor in anything, right? So something like that, prolonged period, is there an adrenaline dump in the middle of it? I mean, I can't imagine that anybody could stay at that heightened level for an extended period without drugs, for an extended period of time without dealing with the crash.
Yeah, there absolutely is. I could see it in like the faces of, so it happened right when our graveyard and our day watch crews were coming on. So we, fortunate in that we had twice as many people at the scene that we normally would have, but sending the graveyard crew home and them not knowing the outcome, and you could see that in their faces, because they were, you know, they're the ones that breached the door. They're the ones that were inside originally, and now I got to send you home because you got to come back and work, and you've been up 16 hours or working 16 hours in their face. And yeah, throughout the incident, there's highs and lows. There's, you know, you get the hostages, that's a high, and then you go back into hours of negotiations. So,
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Chief Brian Stevens from Eureka Police Department. So as this incident played out, Brian, and the when we left, the adrenaline rush was down. You had a shift change. The guys that started the game weren't there to finish the game. Okay. Probably very rare in police, you know, unless it's like maybe investigating of a cold case or something like that. How did the guys and gals that inherited the situation, they come on, they get the adrenaline rush. How long did they make it before they started to kind of have to deal with the dump?
Yeah, it was by the time, you know, the SWAT team showed up, our second group, our day watch crew that was on scene, got transferred to more collateral duties. So perimeter, keeping people out, giving breaks and doing things like that, which is very important because we needed to maintain the integrity of the scenes for the safety of the operators and everybody else. So so it was a little different. It's a different kind of, like, they don't know. They hear radio transmissions occasionally. They get updates. That's when they may get that sudden, like, okay, maybe we're getting close to the end. Oh, no, we're not getting close to the end. Things just changed again, you know. So so that's a back and forth that you feel throughout an event that goes for a long time, as you hear from the negotiators that we're trying to negotiate a surrender, or he's absolutely not coming out, or now he just shut the door, or I mean, there's all kinds of things
small
that happen.
Things.
Yeah, that gives you a glimmer of like we're getting close to. It just it resets you and like, okay, we're going to be here for a while. What else can we do? And then staying focused, especially for, the men and women on the perimeter or the helping out with the command post or whatever. It's like staying focused throughout that, not getting sidetracked, not getting complacent on what you need to do.
Or drifting. Take a mental vacation for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That could be a big deal.
Yeah, because they were there to support the operators that were inside. And so that's where switching them out on a regular basis and making sure that I had a command staff or a sergeant who was making contact with them, so they weren't getting lost in the chaos that we were trying to control, but they were staying in the loop enough that they knew what was going on.
So the internal communications.
Yeah, it's vital.
That was one of the, when you were describing that, was one of the challenges, I would think. I know this is going to, give me a sec. Being a space geek, NASA and stuff, these guys are flying these capsules, and somebody's going to be paying attention all the time. I mean, it's literally life and death, second by second. Okay. How do you maintain that focus? How do you guys maintain that focus? Because obviously things can change in a literal blink of an eye, so that you're not caught by surprise, or now you have that delay, and now it's another 15, 20 seconds, and things develop off of that that necessarily shouldn't or wouldn't happen if somebody was dialed in.
For me in this incident especially, I was working closely with the captain from the sheriff's department that was in charge of the operators. And then I had support personnel that was there that, if I didn't hear the radio, they were hearing the radio. So, because you get caught up in, I have to have this conversation, I have to go to this briefing, I want to ask about this, I'm curious about this piece that's going on. So having somebody there that can just answer the phone for you. Because the phone starts blowing up as soon as these incidents happen. And, I mean, it can be a ton of people, but they all generally, if they're calling to the command, they have some reason to be calling. So making sure those phone calls get answered, but that it's not distracting you from what you're doing. So then you just get asked a question. Hey, can we give out this information? Hey, do we need to do this? And you can answer that, and somebody else is relaying the information. So it's... I've learned over the years, there's been plenty of times I haven't taken advantage of that type of stuff and try to do it myself. And then it's like 30 minutes later, you're realizing somebody's called you that has some information for you or offers support or something like that, and you missed it. And then, you're like, well, crud. You could really use that, So, yeah, trying to build that command post, trying to build the support that you need to not only make the logical, knowledgeable decisions and you hope that are right during the incident, but to keep those distractions from pulling your mind away from what you need to do.
Well, and the confidence is to rely on. The system and the individuals that are in play. I know you guys do a lot of training. Is this on that list of things to train into?
You know where this comes in? It's after the event. So we've had, like if we've talked about, we've had some of these events in the past where we haven't utilized a scribe, a phone call, somebody to hold my phone and stuff like that. So you learn and you keep building that toolbox over the years. And then, it could be an earthquake. When we had the last big earthquake and we all got called in, we have a whole plan now how we're going to do different, who we're going to call in. And we usually stick to who are the first responders, who are the ones that are going to be on the ground, but it's like our office is closed. I have a ton of professional staff employees, not a ton, but I have professional staff employees who have skill sets that could be very valuable for helping run an incident like this that we just need to get them in here and get them to work on something else. That frees up other people. So you learn through doing and by mistakes most of the time.
Yeah, not battle to make scars.
Again. Yeah.
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 Reassigning is kind of an interesting, or taking the skill sets and seeing where there is an opportunity. Is that what the incident command does? Or is that, like you said, you had a sergeant with you. Is that what they can do? Because they're not right, they're not at the tip of the spear. They're kind of back a little bit.
A little bit of both. There are decisions we make that come directly from the incident command of an incident, and there's decisions I allot my commanders and sergeants. If I put them in charge, like, hey, Sarge, you're in charge of the perimeter units, take care of them. If they need anything or you need anything, let me know. Then I entrust that they're making adjustments, doing the things they need to do, and I allow them that leeway to do that without having approval. Without having to run every single decision back up through the command post.
I would think that could be so debilitating to the organization if you had that structure in place that you had to sign off, or whoever had to sign off on every single little. It's like, why am I here?
Yeah. 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 Those are important at times. I mean, in that SWOT format, and they're making decisions, that's important. But yeah, you're right. You got to let people grow, and that's how we grow new leaders in the department, is to give them those opportunities.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Chief Brian Stevens from the Eureka Police Department. You got the new business cards, right?
I do. They are in.
Oh, yes. Right. You know, taking that the Mark-a-Lot or the Sharpie and crossing it out. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're in.
Cool. You autographing them now for people?
If you like one, I will, but they're not going to be worth
any
more.
I didn't say that.
They're not going to be worth any more than the paper they're on. So
yeah, well, okay, fair enough. Lessons learned. One of the things I think that a lot of business folks and department heads really benefit from is the gap management. You know, the folks that preceded you, Dandy, they had it dialed in, but every incident, every event, every day, there's a little bit something more potential if you're paying attention. Lessons learned on this one, or is it still too early?
I mean, for the incident itself, I think it's still too early. We still have members of both departments that are going through the process of dealing with the incident, and so we haven't had the tactical debrief yet because the investigation itself is still ongoing. So there will be lessons learned. Lessons learned from my half, yeah. I mean, something as simple as with the limited number of personnel we have, you know, I have a volunteer group that I didn't even think about calling on to help with logistics of things like
traffic control and things,
or
like
even
that.
Just feeding the people that were out there, you know, making those runs to get drinks or waters or food. And so that's something we had our meeting the other day with the volunteers, and you know, I now have another on-call list for people that necessarily don't want to come out and stand at a, you know, a control point for 5-6 hours in the rain. But if I call them, they're more than willing to come in and do a
run
food
down
run,
to the sandwich shop.
Go back to the department, get batteries for radios, things like that. Because not always do I have personnel to do that, especially when you start looking at traffic control and setting up a perimeter, you start getting really thin. So, I mean, that was one that popped in mind. And I know from the investigation side, we have a countywide, the CERT team that does all the officer involved shootings during custody deaths. We have an MOU. We have a plan that they've put in place to do these investigations. And, you know, the last 4 or 5, always something has popped up that we realize isn't covered. You can't account for everything that's going to happen. So we keep having these conversations, you know, things keep changing, you know, who's going to be in charge of a suspect if they have to go out of town to a hospital, you know, who's in charge of that overtime to do that, you know, who's going to make any repairs to anything that we have to collect evidence from if we have to damage something to get evidence out of a wall of a residence or something, you know. And so those little things that pop up. But the great thing is that there's such great communication among the agencies and among those involved that we're able to sit down at a table and work through these and then make the documents better, make the process better, and make people even better the next time it comes around. So,
well, if you're at that level, that doesn't sound like it's necessarily going to impact the outcome directly. It's the support side.
Yeah.
9 out of 10 times, which just makes it a smoother process. When you get together, and I know you've gone to some of the chief's meetings in the past, is this the kind of stuff you guys talk about, or is this bar talk?
No, this is, it definitely will be discussed on LECA. One, be able to share the appreciation for all the agencies that reached out and things they did that we just don't have a chance to do. But two, a lot of the MOU, a lot of the CERT processes are talked about there and about how we need to change things. And then we put people in charge of ad hoc committees to start rewriting, doing things. So it's great because everyone at these meetings are involved in the process and could be any of our agencies at any given day that needs to call upon.
Yeah, it's not specific to EPD.
Yeah, no. So having that input all the way around from both, you know, the state and yeah, state agencies, federal agencies, parks, trying to build something that works the best we can for everybody. So,
I know this sounds kind of weird, but how common is something like this? I mean, do most smaller communities, get rid of the major metros, okay, the other guys that are in the state, does this stuff happen on a regular enough basis so everybody kind of has experience over, let's say, a two-year window of this type of thing, or is this another one of the things that sets us apart?
The frequency is not there in definitely our jurisdiction. I mean, just off the top of my head, I've been on two now hostage situations. SWAT call-outs have gone on for a long period of time, but that's over, you know, 25 years. So, I can't say that. I mean, thank God the frequency is not there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but it's definitely challenging when it comes to those type of circumstances, and that's when you really have to rely on the training and those around you that maybe have more experience too. So that was a big question we kept asking was, am I missing anything? I'm okay to ask. Yeah, I'm okay to make decisions too when I have to, when they're like time sensitive decisions, but there's nothing says a leader can't step back and ask somebody else, are we missing something? Because I can't always remember things.
I think that's a sign of a healthy leadership team.
Yeah.
You say, okay, guys, tell me where we're wrong.
Yeah.
And be able to go from there. It is intriguing. So is the response protocols similar to, let's say, a major accident or a lot of vehicles, maybe not major, but let's, you know, a bunch of fender benders that jack things up, or earthquakes or things like that that are more sudden as contrasted to like flooding. I mean, you know what's coming. Great. Okay, whatever. But something like this, it's unexpected and it's game on.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just from the generical foundational piece of it, yeah, you want to locate the incident no matter what it is, traffic accident, whatever house this incident occurred in, isolate it, make it safe, and then evacuate or take care of whatever needs to be taken care of. So you got to find it first. You got to make it safe so you can operate within it, so especially like a traffic accident, and then you start taking care of everything that's inside of there and what that looks like. So if you think about it that way, yeah, you can respond to most things and use that to help set up what needs to happen next, especially in those immediate kind of things like you're talking about, traffic accidents, when you get there and you roll up and there's five cars and one of them's upside down. I gotta isolate this so I can work in here safely. And then you start prioritizing what needs to be done from there.
Yeah, I'm thinking of things that would not be that quick. Flood, wind, fire. Pestilence, I guess. But most things I would think are similar to this.
Yeah.
Rather than this being the odd man out or the extraordinary. Well, I guess it is by definition extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I that's a good baseline to use for most responses from an officer level, especially is to use that lie, acknowledge, or yeah, that acronym lie, and locate, isolate, and
not
live,
not media relations.
No.
I almost had you saying something there. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Stevens from the Eureka Police Department. How long does it take for investigations to conclude? I know it's situational. I know that there's some that are ongoing forever and ever and ever. And back down, Kyla. But for something to get to the point where either you're able to submit it to the DA's office, or that you feel that you've pretty much run the end, how long do you go with a typical situation? I know there are always extraordinaries, but for a normal, are you looking at a couple months, couple weeks, couple days? What do you?
Are we talking about this, the incident we've been talking about, this kind of case, or just in general from a law enforcement standpoint?
General terms, because you know there's always the outliers.
Yeah. I think the crime kind of dictates the length of the investigation. So if an officer responds to, let's say, a domestic violence call in and there's the evidence, we have to take a report, there's an obvious injury, they make the arrest, that report's going over within 48 hours because that person potentially could be charged and that needs to be done within a relatively short amount of time. But if we have a case where...
It's a burglary.
I mean, if we have the suspect, then it's done. But if we're trying to put together a string and we're trying to gather the evidence then to put that together, then, yeah, it could take weeks because we're dealing with multiple businesses, multiple reports. Somebody's gathering all that evidence to put together. But then we're trying to find surveillance and other pieces that we can start actually putting. You know, we may have a good idea who the suspect is, but we have to now put it together to where we could have a jury that can look at this evidence and say, yes, that is the guy, even though you didn't catch him in the act. Here's all the factors that make that, you know, be our suspect. And we got cases that are still open, you know. I mean, there's homicides from 1940s that we still have that haven't been solved. So,
does anybody look at those?
Occasionally, yeah. Occasionally. And generally, somebody calls and says something that triggers, maybe we should go back and look at this or, you know.
Kind of like dominoes?
Yeah.
Starting to fall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about cold cases before.
Yeah, so, yeah. That stuff would be cool, I think. Not only to have it wrapped up, but to be able to think through something. Because I would think at that point, it's not physical evidence. It's mental. It's connecting the dots, you know, the puzzle part.
It is. And then with the changes in technology, we can use some of that physical evidence now to support that thinking through. And could it be, and now I can show that, yes, there's still DNA on this, and now it matches somebody because we can actually test that now we couldn't maybe do in 1940. So
does the system, I guess it'd be the system, not just DPD, routinely go back and revisit some of that physical evidence as new technology becomes available, or, you know, somebody buys the new machine in the county and you run everybody through it, there are all the cases through it that might have some kind of opportunity to get some more information out of?
I am sure in larger agencies they do have detectives that are solely assigned to do that, just that right there, look at those old cases. Unfortunately, we just don't have the manpower to do that right now. Maybe someday we hire enough people, get enough the right people in there, or get somebody once it's retired, once come back and just maybe look at some of these cases from a perspective that they have all this experience, then yeah, I would be happy to open some of those back up and see if we can use the technology we have today to see if we can get any further than they did back then.
Need to be badge wearers, or is that something the volunteers that you were referencing earlier could assist with?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a volunteer. It would be someone that's got experience in handling evidence, because you only get one shot sometimes.
That's right. You could screw it up and, you know, lose it forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, oops. I didn't mean to drop it on the floor.
Yeah.
Where do you see 6 months from now? Anything different other than this season?
From an agency standpoint, we just had a really good recruitment for police cadets. I think we had 26 total applications.
So really? 26?
Yeah. So we're working through those right now. My goal is to have a minimum of 5 in the July Academy. I'm trying not to be too optimistic. My dad taught me better. But yeah, at least 5 in the July Academy, and if not more, I would take, you know, we're 11, 12 positions still down. So, but we've had good recruitments all across the board. We just closed our record specialist. I think we had 30 some applicants for that. We're opening up our budget analyst position this week.
Okay, so is this new leadership that's triggering this? Is this the economy?
No,
that's
I think
triggering
you're seeing
it,
the
or
swing.
Or just a backswing?
I think you're seeing the swing and. I mean, well, unemployment, people are getting back into the workplace after COVID. And I think that pendulum just swings. And with things that happen, sometimes it swings and pushes people out, and sometimes they see it as stable employment, especially on the professional staff side. So we're going to be looking for a budget analyst to take care of all our financial projects, grants, things in the department. I'll have a couple administrative technician positions coming open that we'll be flying. And maybe that's it. But yeah, so we have some recruitment trips we're coming up that we were supposed to be in Siskiyou today, but the weather, we decided to cancel. It wasn't worth risking sending our people over.
What are you going over to Weed for?
They have a police academy over there. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that different than what Redwoods has?
Yeah, so there are numerous...
Just a different emphasis, or just...
Just a different location. So they have their own police academy attached to the College of the Siskiyous over there. So we're supposed to go to Siskiyou today. We're going to Santa Rosa, somewhere else. All in the next 2 weeks. And then we'll be at Cal Poly on, I think, the 12th or the 15th for a job fair they're having up there. We're going to promote some of our professional staff positions up there. And dispatch. Dispatch
watch
is the
watch
other
out
one.
For the radio booth.
So we'll see you up there.
Yeah.
But
So as you plug folks into these various academies, do they have different strengths or areas of emphasis? Is there like a dispatch versus another area that is really focused on? Or are they all... Yeah, it's a capacity issue, and if one's full, you look for another one.
Yeah, so that's just it. It may be where you live, so you can live close to where an academy is. All the academies that we're going to are focused on law enforcement, but we're also going to promote our other positions because they may have spouses, friends, other people that are looking and may want to come with them. And if I can draw you to being a cop, but your wife's a dispatcher somewhere, sharing that knowledge that you both could come work for us could be huge. So.
Interesting times.
It is.
All right, bud. Thanks for coming by.
Have a great month.
And congratulations again.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.